Questioning Paul Chapter 12 Part 6.
You don't need me to tell you that Shaul was the plague of death. Yahweh affirmed this in no uncertain terms in Chabaquuwq/Habakkuk, 666 years in advance no less. You don't need me to tell you that Paul was a false prophet. We now know that he failed all of Yahweh's tests in Deuteronomy 13:18. You don't need me to tell you that Shaul lied. We now know that his testimony regarding our means to become part of God's family was in complete conflict with Yahweh's Torah and Yahusha's testimony. You don't need me to explain what happened on the road to Damascus. Paul confessed to the crime. And in this regard, Yahusha would be remarkably specific about who the wannabe apostle saw on the road to Damascus, describing Satan's fall from heaven and our dominion over him. Luke, in 10:18, translates Yahusha, saying,
"But then he said to them, I saw the adversary, Satan, as lightning, a bright beam of flashing light from the heavens, having fallen. Behold, I have given you the authority, ability, and opportunity to trample, being superior to, serpents and scorpions. So upon the entirety of the adversary's power, therefore, you will absolutely never be harmed by his fraudulent deceit." Luke 10:18-19.
Now, let's compare that to Paul's depiction of what he experienced.
"But to me it happened, traveling and approaching Damascus around noon, suddenly and unexpectedly from the sky, unheard by lightning strike, sufficient and adequate light about me." Acts 22:6.
Paul's depiction is exactly as Yahusha had described the fall of Satan. Paul even used the same words. So it is remarkable that Christians the world over disregard the accurate prophecy to embrace the false prophet. He even went on to say,
"And do not wonder, for indeed, he, the adversary Satan, changes his appearance into a spiritual, heavenly messenger of light." 2 Corinthians 11:14.
How's that for an admission of guilt? You don't need me to tell you who Shaul heard on that frightful day. The false prophet already did so by quoting the false god, Dionysus.
"And every one of us having fallen down to the earth, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, Shaul, Shaul, why are you actually pursuing me? It's hard for you to resist against the goad." Acts 26:14.
Paul deliberately put a pig and proverb into the aberration's mouth in the third of his three depictions of his conversion experience in Acts 26:14, wherein he was defending himself before King Agrippa. Paul's citation, as you now know, came from Euripides the Bacchae, where rebelling against the code was used to describe the consequence of personally having to endure the havoc and madness that would be wrought by the Greek god, Dionysus, on the kingdom if someone refused to worship him. But before we reconsider why Dionysus was chosen by Paul, or Satan, please note the intersection between the scorpions, in Yahusha's demonic reference and Shaul's quote. This too is telling. When we examine the myths which grew out of Satan's religious counterfeits, we find that the closest pagan parallel to Yahusha is Dionysus, which is why he was chosen. Just as Yahusha's blood is represented by wine, Dionysus, Bacchus in Roman mythology, was the god of wine. He died each fall but was reborn at the winter solstice, December 25th on the Julian calendar, and then was supposedly resurrected each spring. This renewal became an annual religious festival celebrating the promise of an afterlife. Held over the course of 5 days each spring, the Dionysia set the stage for the Christian replacement of Passover, unyeasted bread, and firstborn children, with Palm Sunday Passion Sunday, Maundy Thursday Institution of Communion, Good Friday Death and Burial of Jesus Christ, Holy Saturday, where Jesus rested in the grave, and Easter Sunday occurring during the last week of the Babylonian Festival of Lent, where there was great weeping for Thomas, the son of the sun. Just as Yahusha had a divine father and a mortal mother, Mary, Dionysus is said to have had a divine father, Zeus, the father of the gods, and mortal mother, Semhel. And by his death and resurrection, Dionysus was responsible for liberating his believers and thereby providing the faithful with eternal salvation, in complete harmony with being liberated from the Torah by way of faith in Paul's gospel. And lest we forget, Paul's beloved Jeres, the Roman Gracia, were the progeny of Dionysus and Aphrodite. And I wouldn't be surprised that Paul was inspired in this regard by the reverence he experienced in Lystra, Galatia in 48 CE, where he and Barnabas were worshipped as Zeus, king of the gods, and Hermes, messenger of the gods. You don't need me to tell you that Paul deceived believers when he claimed to have represented Yahusha 17 years in advance of the day they would benefit from this advice. Yahusha warned his disciples to be especially wary of the likes of Paul. His Olivet discourse began with,
"And Yahusha, having responded judgmentally, said to them, 'It's important that you are observant and that you pay attention, presently being aware and perceptive, lest someone will try to cause you to wander away from the truth.'" 24 verse 4.
In a private meeting in which only his disciples were present, Yahusha told them to pay attention and to be careful, lest someone will cause you to wander away from the truth, deceiving and deluding you. Since this warning was stated specifically to and for the disciples, might this someone be Paul, and the occasion be the Jerusalem summit? And if not him, who? If not then, when?
"For many will come in my name, saying, 'I represent the Messiah,' and so many they will mislead." Matthew 24 verse 5.
I would count the billions of Christians who have been led away from Yahweh and his Torah, who have been deceived and deluded by Paul's gospel of grace, as many. In fact, it would be impossible to identify another individual who has misled more people than Paul. And as for Yahusha saying them, instead of him, just as was the case in Ephesus, Paul had a posse comprised of his own disciples.
"Then if someone might say to you, 'Behold, here in this place, the Messiah,' or, 'In this case, over there,' you should not think that this is trustworthy or reliable." Matthew 24 verse 23.
Paul claimed to have seen the Messiah on the road to Damascus, and then again in Arabia. And he is the only one to have made such a claim within the lifetimes of Yahusha's audience, the disciples. So the sandal still fits him, and he alone.
"Because those pretending to be useful implements doing the work of Yahweh and false prophets will arise and take a stand, and they will give many great signs and wonders in order to momentarily deceive and mislead, if possible, even those who choose to be called out." Matthew 24 verse 24.
When Paulus took his stand against God and rose up before Yahusha's disciples in Jerusalem and tried to impress them by bragging about the signs and wonders he had performed, using the exact same phrasing Yahusha had warned them about, they should have remembered this conversation and responded appropriately. And so should we. Paul continues to fail every test. Yahusha's and Yahweh's. Yahusha would be even more specific regarding Paul, tailoring his prophetic prediction to reflect the one of the apostles' boast that he would meet with Yahusha in Arabia, the ultimate scriptural wilderness, and then report this myth to the disciples.
"Pay close attention, I've told you this beforehand, forewarning you." 24 verse 25. "Then when, therefore, someone says to you, 'Look, suddenly, in the wilderness it is currently present,' you should not leave. Indeed, you in the inner room should not consider this to be truthful." Matthew 24 verses 25 to 26.
Juxtapose this with Paul's claim to have encountered the Messiah on the road to Damascus, and then to meeting with him in Arabia, and we discover that once again, Paul is not only a perfect fit for this warning, he is the only candidate who made these claims within the lifetimes of Yahusha's audience. So either Yahusha erred in his prophecy, or he was warning us not to trust Shaul's claims. And let us not forget, Yahusha told his disciples that when he returned, everyone on earth would see him simultaneously, not just one man. You don't need me to tell you that Paul and his traveling companions were the only men who claimed to be apostles in Ephesus during the short time span covered in the Revelation 2 prophecy.
I am aware of and recognize your works and undertakings, the difficult and exhausting encounters, and your unswerving and enduring perseverance, and that you cannot possibly accept, tolerate, support, nor endure that which is incorrect, immoral, injurious, pernicious, destructive, or painful. And you have observed, examined, and objectively tested those who claim and maintain of themselves that they are apostles but are not. And you have found them false, deceitful, and deliberate liars. Revelation 2 verse 2.
Frankly, this prediction is so specific, it's a wonder Paul's reputation survived it. Especially relevant in this regard is that Ephesus was the only city listed among the seven described in Yahusha's Revelation letters where Paul and his pals were known to have preached, and it is the only one with a warning against false apostles. Surely this is not a coincidence. While Revelation is a prophetic book, Yahusha's commendation relative the Ephesians was written in the present and past tense. And that is significant because Yahusha inscribed Revelation in 69 CE, less than 7 years after Shaul wrote his letter to the Ephesians, and within close proximity of Shaul's lonely and isolated death. So considering the fact that Paul and his traveling companions were the only men who claimed to be apostles in Ephesus during this short span of time, Yahusha was calling Shaul inerrant, demonic, deceitful, charlatan. We are without excuse. Christians cannot claim that they were not warned about this devil. But there is even more to this prediction than just a scathing indictment against Paul in the form of praise for not acquiescing to his false teachings. Yahusha would go on to suggest that while the Ephesians rejected the self-proclaimed apostle, they ingested some of his poison.
Nevertheless, I hold this against you, that you have forsaken your first love. Remember therefore the source from whence you have descended from a higher place to a lower one. Change your perspective and attitude and think differently and bring forth the most first, foremost, most desirable, most important and influential investments of your time, works and deeds, or else I will come suddenly and remove your light from its place unless you reconsider, change your perspective, your thinking, and your attitude. Revelation 2 verses 4 to 5.
The Ephesians were eventually swayed by Paul and this they forsook God's word the Torah. We cannot love God without first coming to know Him, which occurs when we study His Torah. Further, the lone path to a loving covenant relationship with God is through His invitations to be called out and meet, which is the way of the Torah. The proof that Paul and his associates preached in Ephesus, that they presented a contrarian view to that of Yahusha's disciples, and thus singled themselves out as being the deceitful liars who were falsely claiming to be apostles, is recorded by Luke. And while we considered this evidence previously in the fifth chapter, when it comes to knowing the truth, a little reinforcement is always a good idea, especially when myths are prevalent and the consequences are so extreme. So then once again corrected and amplified modestly from the Nessel Allen MCREYNOLDS Interlinear's presentation, here is the testimony which demonstrates conclusively that Paul and his disciples represented the false apostles of whom Yahusha spoke.
But it became in the Apollos to be in Corinth, Paulos, having gone through the uppermost parts, came down to Ephesus so as to find some disciples, 19 verse 1, but he said against and regarding them, if conditionally, Spirit Holy you received having trusted the once but not him, then not Spirit Holy there as we heard. 19 verse 2, he said, but into what then were you imsed? And they said, into Yahawchanan's imbision. 19 verse 3, but Paulus said, Yahawchanan imsed immersion of change mind to the people, saying to the coming after him that they might believe this is in the Ists, 19 verse 4, so having heard, they were instant to the name of the Lord Iesu, 19 verse 5, and having set on them the hands of Paul, it came, the Spirit of the Holy on them, they were speaking but in tongues and were uttering prophecy, were but the all manners 12, Acts 19 verses 1 to 7.
While it is impossible based upon the writing quality to know for certain what actually happened, it appears that Paul was threatened by the information he received from Apollos in Corinth. He knew that his message was vastly different than Yahusha's disciples, and he was convinced that one or more of them was treading upon his turf by speaking to these Gentiles. So he headed south, arriving in Ephesus to find the disciples who had challenged him. When he arrived, rather than meeting with Shimon or Yahalchanan, Shaul sought to undermine them, suggesting that the spirit they received as a result of responding to Yahalchanan was not the right spirit, substituting one of his own. Then this dialogue gets a bit murky because Paul's next sentence has two hypothetical conditions, three buts, and a negation in the original Greek text. Navigating through them, it appears that Paul was troubled by the idea that the Ephesians had been immersed in Yahalchanan's message. So Paul immediately claimed that Yahalchanan had instituted unauthorized changes. He then questioned the nature of the spirit they had received. So after listening to Paul's contrarian view, a dozen Ephesians were rebaptized by Paul, with Paul laying his hands on them. This then imbued these men with an entirely different spirit, one which caused them to blather on in tongues, believing that they were inspired prophets. But whatever they were saying, the 12 were now Shaul's disciples, just as Yahusha had chosen 12. It is telling, however, that Yahusha never once immersed or baptized anyone, so there is no need for it and no established way to do it. Therefore, it was absurd to suggest that Yahalchanan's technique was wrong and Shaul's was right. Further, baptism is not the means Yahweh or Yahusha designated to receive the set-apart spirit. There is no mention of it anywhere in the Torah. And adding insult to injury, when the spirit came upon those who were set apart in Yerushal on 7 Sabbath, they were empowered to speak the languages of the nations surrounding Israel. They were not baptized. There was no laying on of hands, they knew nothing of Shaul, they did not speak in tongues, and they did not prophesize. Unfortunately, Paul was just warming up.
But having gone into the synagogue he was preaching fearlessly for 3 months, disputing and persuading about the kingdom of the God. Acts 19 verse 8.
Next we find Shaul's hypocrisy in full bloom. He presented his gospel of grace as the alternative to obeying God's Torah, which he presents as an onerous set of laws. And while there is no Hebrew word for obey, and while Torah does not mean law, Shaul routinely demanded that his audience obey him.
But as some were being stubborn and they were disobedient, speaking abusively of and maligning the way before the crowd, having revolted against, forsaken, and alienated them, he appointed and marked off boundaries, separating the disciples through daily disputes in the lecture hall of Tyrannus, 19 verse 9, and this took place for 2 years so that everyone residing the Asia heard the word of the Lord, both Judeans and Greeks, Acts 19 verses 9 to 10.
We are continuing to rely on the Nestle Allen's MCREYNOLDS English Interlinear to recount Paul's testimony, while augmenting and clarifying it using the most highly regarded lexicons. If you recall, Yahusha specifically stated that there were some in Ephesus who did not believe the false apostle, a reality which has been resoundingly borne out in Paul's own words. And while Yahusha praised the Ephesians for rejecting the liar in his lies, Shaul saw them differently. The very people Yahusha commended, Shaul condemned, calling them SKLERYNOMAI, stubborn, hard-headed, and obstinate, even offensive and intolerable, for refusing to listen. Based upon SKLEROS, Paul viewed those he could not beguile as hard, harsh, and rough men who were stern, intolerant, offensive, and violent. That's almost funny considering the source. Shaul went on to say that his rivals were apatheo, which means that he saw the disciples as being insubordinate, because they disobeyed him and rejected his faith. If that doesn't take your breath away, considering whom he was rebelling against, you may want to check your pulse. One of the most egotistical and presumptuous men to ever purport to speak for God called the disciples God had chosen apatheo, disobedient, and that was because they apatheo, refused to believe him when his message differed from the one God had conveyed to them in word and deed. Paul was laying down the law, his law, to which everyone had to obey or suffer the consequences. There was a new lord in town. Contentious to the bitter end, Paul once again bragged of dialegomai, arguing against and disputing the disciples because their thinking was markedly different. But this time, Paul was not to be found in the synagogue, in the place where those seeking to learn about Yahweh considered his Torah. Shaul turned instead to the Tyrannos stole, where Tyrannos denotes the Lord as a tyrant. There should be no mistaking that Paul's Lord was indeed a despot seeking supremacy. And Paul was lecturing on his behalf. It is a fact little known, but if Paul's preaching is reflected in his letters, he never accurately conveyed anything Yahusha said. In just one of his 13 letters, he made a brief passing attempt, citing a few words Yahusha spoke about Passover, albeit taking his testimony completely out of context while misquoting him. So rest assured, when Shaul claims that everyone in Asia heard him preach the word of the Lord, he was preaching Satan's mantra. Reinforcing this reality, Yahweh consistently refers to the adversary as Baal, Lord, because Satan craves supremacy, mastery, control, obedience, subordination, enslavement, and ownership. Shaul's predilection for these very same things is revealing. Yahweh and Yahusha routinely tell us that dunamis, ability, inherent power, miracles, signs, and wonders, typify braggadocios, false prophets. But since Christians don't listen to either, they typically associate such things with God, and yet here, Paul is saying that God had nothing to do with them. His supernatural power and his extraordinary mastery and skill were the work of his hands, conceived, fashioned, and brought forth without God's assistance.
The ability to perform miraculous miracles and powerful supernatural wonders and not having obtained in association with the God were performed through the hands of Paul. Acts 19 verse 11.
I realize that this sounds too incriminating to be true, not unlike Paul admitting to being both insane and demon-possessed. So I encourage skeptics to verify the meaning of T, likewise in corresponding to, serving as the marker of a relationship, to, constituting a negation and denial, tas, the definite article in the accusative form, and especially nichkano for yourself. It was negated in this statement by you, not in any way, and precedes tas theos, of God. Therefore, in this context it denotes having disclaimed an experience with God, having disavowed happening upon or meeting with God, and of not having a relationship with God. And while that's indicting, by turning to Tichkano's secondary connotation, we find Paul admitting to not hitting the mark regarding extraordinary and unexpected performances which require uncommon skill. Therefore, it appears that the very attitude which got Satan expelled from heaven was now afflicting Paul, and his legend grew with these fanciful claims.
Also that upon the weak was to be carried away from the skin of him, handkerchiefs or aprons, and to be settled upon them the illnesses and annoying spirits to depart out and leave. Acts 19 verse 12.
Paul is claiming that napkins or aprons were placed upon his skin and then carried to those who were sick, and that as a result annoying spirits were exorcised from the diseased. This is creepy in the extreme, not unlike today's charlatans who fleece their flock by pretending to heal the sick during religious spectacles. It is another case of Paul claiming to be divine. But this time he was also incriminating himself by suggesting that evil spirits cause disease, and must be exorcised, to heal the sick. The spirits to depart out were called poneros, annoying, burdensome, harassing, troublesome, wicked, corrupt, worthless, faulty, and criminal. It is the same revolting word Paul associated with the old system, which he later identified as the Torah. And here, the spirit associated with Yahushanan, Yahusha's most beloved disciple, was the one rejected by Shaul and replaced by another of his choosing during the rebaptism. So I suspect that the reason Paul saw this set-apart spirit as annoying, is that she was opposed to everything he said and did. When Paul's own testimony is considered as a legacy of Yahusha's denunciation of the apostles of Ephesus, he alone is convicted of that crime. His confession was also scribed in his first letter to Timothy.
Paulos, apostle of Christu Jesu by mandate, command, and direct order of God, deliverer of us, and Christu Jesu, the hope of us, 1 verse 1, to Timothy, genuine, lawful, and legitimate child in faith, grace, mercy, peace from God, Father, and Christu Jesu, the Lord of us, 1 verse 2, inasmuch as I pleaded with you to remain longer and continue on in Ephesus while I was proceeding to Macedonia in order that you might command certain individuals not to teach a different doctrine. 1 Timothy 1 verses 1 to 3.
As clearly as words allow, Paulus was confessing to the crime Yahusha told us had been committed in Ephesus. Shaul admitted that Ephesus was the primary battleground in his war against Yahusha's teaching as it had been conveyed through Yahushanan, their first love. Having fought for years against both, Paul would deploy every resource to keep God's emissaries at bay, seeking to undermine the Torah with its long genealogies, wherein the beneficiaries of the covenant are documented, Paul wrote.
Nor give oneself over to myths and fables or endless genealogies with unlimited family lineages, or whatever worthless speculation and aimless arguments they maintain and cling to instead of, alternatively, the administration and oversight of God in the faith or belief system. 1 Timothy 1 verse 4, they were disabled through avoidance, straying and turning away by meaningless conversations, idle and empty talk, senseless and vain words. 1 verse 6, deciding and desirous of being teachers of the Torah, not ever providing nor understanding, considering, or comprehending it, neither in what they say nor what they are concerned about and state with such confidence, insisting upon, maintaining, and proclaiming so assuredly. 1 verse 7, but we have come to be somewhat aware that the good use of the Torah is if conditionally someone might deal with it correctly in accordance to the rules. 8, having realized this, the Torah is not in place for the righteous or saved, but for the Torahless, for the disobedient who are not subject to religious beliefs, for unholy sinners and disobedient outcasts who are mistaken, for those who are accessible and open-minded who kill their own fathers, and for murderers of their own mothers, those slaughtering mankind. 9, for the sexually immoral and perverted, for homosexual pedophiles and sodomites, for slave traders and kidnappers, for liars and perjurers who provide false witness, and also if some other, different, or alternative thing be opposed to the accurate and sound doctrine. 10, in accord with the beneficial message of the brilliant and glorious, the blessed and fortunate God which was entrusted to me, myself. 1 Timothy 1 verses 8 to 11.
With this confession, Yahusha's warning regarding the false apostles operating in Ephesus becomes nearly as incriminating as Yahusha's prophetic revelation in Habakkuk.
End of part 6.